is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klensling here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. 1:13 a.m., last dance, numbers 9 and 10. Initial thoughts, Jay?
I liked episode 9 a lot, and we'll get into what I learned in episode 9, because there were some things that I learned. And then episode 10, you know, we talked a little bit beforehand. I kind of was let down by episode 10. Maybe it's because I just remember a lot of what happened in episode 10, and I don't feel like I learned anything super new in episode 10.
I think there was a lot of things when you looked at the choices that they had to make in terms of how do they finish off a story that everybody already knows the ending to. And then you had to make some editorial choices about, do you finish with the shot against Utah? How much of the reaction after that? I thought the scene of him playing the piano and just telling people to enjoy the moment, I thought that was kind of an interesting scene there towards the end of episode 10. The one thing that I thought tonight, maybe compared to the previous Sunday nights, was there wasn't as many just gotcha moments, for lack of a better way of saying it, images that were so impactful. But I do think that they did a good job of telling the story and getting you up to speed. The flashbacks this week were Steve Kerr.
I did not know that story at all.
Oh, really? You didn't know that?
I didn't know. That was one thing I did not know. I knew nothing about Steve Kerr's dad being killed in Beirut.
Okay, so I thought that was, I guess maybe because of our age difference again, that was sort of common knowledge. I don't know that I remembered necessarily every single detail of what happened, but certainly I was aware of the fact that his father was in Beirut and was the president of the university and got killed. But just again, to go back through, and I had kind of forgotten about that. We really didn't talk about that last week, that there was going to be a moment of going back and sort of reflection with Kerr. And I thought that was interesting again, especially in light of where Kerr is now in the league and the things that he's done to this point. And clearly with the punch and practice and how that was going to be perceived, and then going in today and him hitting the big shot against the Jazz in the fifth title run. It was interesting to go back and see that Steve Kerr stuff for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, I didn't know anything about it. I did like he said he started to find his footing when he played for Cleveland. That made me feel good inside. Like he talked a little bit about the Cavs. I don't feel like we got any needless celebrities really on this episode tonight. Mike, what do you think? I thought it was cool to see young Leo. My God, he looked like he was 15 in that pick. I don't know how old he was, but he looked young in there. But I thought that was good that we didn't get a lot of. I don't think we got any needless celebrity interviews, right?
We didn't get the interviews. I didn't really need the DiCaprio scene, but it was fine. But yeah, there was no really needless. I thought the Obama interview was well placed.
Hey, and they put president on it. Did you notice?
They did do that last time he was on too.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, they upgraded him last time, so it was only that first time that he was former Chicago resident.
I missed it the last time. I probably was like not staring at my screen like doing other things. But when I saw, I actually missed it again. But I actually went back on my iPad
just to check and see
if they gave him the upgrade to president and not Chicago resident. Or whatever it was before. So
former Chicago resident is what he was.
That's what it was.
Whatever
so,
the first episode was.
I'm just glad to see he's still President Obama.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's start at the beginning of episode 9, which begins with the Eastern Conference Finals against Indiana. And I thought the Reggie Miller interviews were pretty interesting. The thing that I took away from those more than anything was at the end where he's saying that he thought they were the better team and that they should have won. I mean, come on, Reggie. Let's
Rick Smith.
I don't know how you say that, because be one thing if they had won the year before and then they went on this long run of titles after the Bulls were gone, where like, okay, so when the Bulls lose to the Bad Boy Pistons in the Scotty Migraine game, they could probably rightfully come out of that game saying, I thought we were better than Detroit, because the next year they sweep them 4-0 and go on and win whatever, 6 titles in 8 years. The Reggie Miller Pacers don't win any titles. I guess they get to 1 finals against Shaq and Kobe and the Lakers. But I think if you're the best team, there has to be more evidence than just you sitting in front of a camera saying that you thought you were the better team.
Were you surprised they didn't give Jalen Rose more time, considering he's an ESPN personality, or are you not surprised?
I mean, Jalen was such a bit player on that team. You know, you go down the list of the guys that were most important to that team, and he was probably, whew, I don't know. I mean, he's clearly not in their top 5 or 6 guys that were impactful on that team. Not to say that he didn't have an impact, but he certainly wasn't one of the guys that was stirring the drink at that point. So, and yeah, I'm not surprised they didn't.
Well, I'm just saying that. And Mark Jackson not even interviewed at all for this. Like, that's mind blowing too, in my opinion, because he's ESPN. I'm just thinking, because I figured those guys are easy to get. They're ESPN guys, but
right. You would think they were easy to get. You wonder if they provided interviews, but were left on the cutting room floor with other stuff. Because you got to figure that they had lots and lots of interviews that ended up getting left out. So maybe those two guys just, for whatever reason, didn't bring something that was super quotable. You could clearly see, though, in that series that Chicago was being pushed. I mean, you could feel that they, not that they thought they were going to lose, or not that they, but there was clearly a little bit of wavering that, hey, are they going to be able to pull this through? And obviously they did. And it was funny how they talked so much about the jump ball. I don't know if you read the Zach Lowe article about that series. And he talked a lot about how everybody involved in that series talked about that jump ball and how important it was that the Bulls kind of stole that tip, and then Kerr hits the 3, and that sort of shifted the momentum to away from Indiana and to the Bulls. And you know, that jump ball was with like 6.5 minutes left to go in the game.
Yeah, that's just, I don't buy into that. I think that's hype more than anything. I don't think
that's how I felt watching it. I'm like, okay, maybe that's a big play in the game, but Indiana goes up 5 with 6 minutes to go. I'm not really counting Jordan out on that one.
Yeah, or how about if there was like 30 seconds left in the game, I could buy it. But 6.5 minutes, there's so many things that can happen in 6.5 minutes. I mean, heck, you saw the Reggie Miller against the Knicks. Like, 6.5 minutes is so much time. And if Reggie Miller can do that against the Knicks, what's stopping Michael from doing something like that? So I just think that's overhyped. You know, you talk about how you saw this spider and it was like 3 inches wide long, and then like 5 years later it's like it was like this huge spider. I think it's kind of that kind of situation going on where it gets a little blown out of proportion.
Yeah, that could very well be. It certainly doesn't seem like that play could have been had as huge of an impact as sort of the participants are saying today. It just seems like there was too far away from the final buzzer for that to be that impactful of a play that neither team could have recovered from what happened on that particular jump ball.
How about after the game with him and Larry Bird?
That's the takeaway. That's the takeaway moment for me from these two episodes. The quote, the scene that you're always going to remember. And it's just funny how they, you know, Bird's walking down the hallway and then basically
I'll edit myself here. UBFU is what right, Jordan says to him.
But those are like the only, you know, those are the only words. And then he's like, yeah, you get a chance to go work on your golf game. And Bird really doesn't say anything, but you just forget like what the relationship is between these guys at the highest level. And clearly there was, after having been teammates on the dream team, and there was clearly a lot of mutual respect. The other thing I loved about the episode and the series with the Pacers and relates to Bird is when Reggie Miller hits that shot and the whole place, I think that was game six, I believe, that Reggie hits that shot with whatever 1.1 to go. Bird is just stone cold because he knows, he's like, we left too much time on the clock. Like that thing had to go in with 0-0. But you think about just the ability to, I mean, it's incredible that he was just able to stand there and not, I mean, he basically didn't even react. I mean, it was complete and utter stone face, and it was incredible. And then of course Jordan has to double pump that off the 1.1 second and kicks it off the backboard.
Almost goes in still.
And almost goes in. And I think the other thing that struck me from this documentary, and it goes to sort of my argument for one of my biggest arguments for Jordan being the greatest player of all time, and you can compare him to whoever else you want to compare him to, whether it's LeBron or somebody else. But I think that my biggest argument that I always make is that I always felt like there was a sense of inevitability with Jordan that I just never doubted he was going to figure out a way to win a game or win a series or whatever it is. But even when you watch tonight, you see that over the course of his career, and even in big moments, he missed plenty of game-winning shots. He missed plenty of opportunities where he had a chance to knock people out. And yet, he always came back the next time and got it done. Like, he was a guy who could, you equate him to a boxer, he could take a right to the chin, get knocked down, get up at the count of nine, and yet you still knew that he had something, he could dig deep inside of himself and come back and win it. And I just feel like, again, the word that keeps coming to mind is inevitability, that there was just, he just wasn't going to lose. And you saw that, I think, even clearer when you juxtapose all the game winners that he hit with the shots that he missed and the games that he didn't come through. And then what does he do? He comes back the next game and he avenges it either with a huge performance or a buzzer beating winning shot. And to me, like I've said many, many, many times, there's just nobody who's ever been as ruthless of a competitor as him. And you could talk all the skill stuff you want and how great of a player he was, but what really separated him was his brain and his mind and his competitiveness. And those things, I just don't know that you're ever going to duplicate those in any other athlete. He was just incredible from that standpoint. You saw it throughout the entire documentary, and it really struck me tonight, like I said, because of the shots that you saw him miss and then his ability to bounce back and get things done.
Yeah. Just amazing. Just you could never count him out. I mean, that's really the bottom line, is the resiliency of him and just his drive. Like, you could never really count him out. I mean, and we're going to transition into this Utah series, which has lots of moving parts in it, lots of things going on. But you know, you just look at that and you say, could you really pick anyone before him to be on your team? Because I don't think you can. You know, if we're taking the best athlete, I probably take LeBron, Mike. I mean, best athlete, pure physical specimen.
Oh man.
Best physical specimen. I'm not saying best player. I'm saying the best physical specimen for my team. I'm probably taking LeBron. But for best player, I'm not taking LeBron. I'm taking Jordan. No, hands down.
Well, I mean, you can argue that LeBron is just bigger and physically stronger, and maybe that allows him to do some other different things, maybe. But Jordan athletically at his peak, I mean, I don't know. I put him up against anybody in terms of just sheer athleticism. And I guess it depends on how you define that athleticism. But I think what truly makes him the greatest beyond the competitiveness and beyond the mindset that I talked about earlier is just that he was a guy who had the best physical gifts that anyone could have. And we could split hairs and say he's the first, you know, he's the best athlete, he's the fourth best athlete, whatever. He's a guy who was immensely, immensely gifted. And yet he's a guy who I think, you know, you talked about, they talked about in the documentary when Kerr was saying, you know, Kerr sort of labeled himself as an overachiever. And he said, I think Michael appreciated the fact that I was an overachiever. And it sounds stupid to say, but to me, I almost think Jordan is an overachiever in that he took what he had and he utilized every ounce of what he was given. And to me, that's what separates him from the other great players in the history of the league, is he had more gifts and he utilized those gifts and maximized them to the best of his ability.
You kind of referenced my favorite part of the first hour was the Steve Kerr speech when he said that obviously Michael looked at him and said he wasn't feeling good about the pressure of the shot and that he needed to take the shot or something along those lines. You know, his speech at the parade.
That was a really
good quote. And obviously Jordan was actually laughing about that. Cause like, you know, I think obviously they just won the championship, but I thought that was a pretty good one. That was a pretty good quote.
That was funny. I liked the in-game footage of right before the shot where they're talking on the bench and you couldn't really hear what Jordan was saying, but basically Kerr was telling us that he was saying, hey, be ready, man. You know, ball's going to come to you. Be ready. And then Kerr is like, he was like a little puppy dog, like bouncing up and down. I'll be ready. He's like yelling back to Jordan. I'll be ready. I'll be ready. I really got a kick out of that. I don't know that I've seen that before. I'm sure it's out there, but I just don't remember seeing it.
Did you know that it wasn't actually the flu and it was food poisoning? Did you know that or no? Was that new information?
I did know that. No, it's not new information. I did know that. I don't know that I knew the story of five guys showing up with the pizza and then Jordan saying, I ate the whole pizza. I think it's interesting, too, that, you know, you got a sense of it tonight and we got a sense of it in a couple other episodes of just, like, who he was hanging out with. And, you know, in the hotel room is, you know, Tim Grover and the guy, what's the guy's name? George Kohler or whatever that guy's name was. Did we talk about this? How they got to be friends? I don't know if they went into that in the documentary or I might have read it somewhere. I don't think they did either, but I think I read it somewhere where basically that guy was picking up somebody from the airport in Jordan's rookie year when Jordan first flew into Chicago. And the guy, whoever he was supposed to be picking up from the airport, didn't show up. And Jordan got off the plane and, I don't know, was looking for a ride or whatever. And so this guy gave him a ride from the airport. And then the two of them became like best friends from this accidental meeting in the airport. Kind of a cool story.
Yeah. I never knew that. And I really don't think that they did that. I don't think that they put that anywhere in the episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember where I know I read about that because people were talking on Twitter, I think, about who is this guy and how did he come to be connected with Michael. And so it was just, yeah, again, totally chance that whoever he was supposed to be picking up at the airport didn't show. And instead he ended up driving Jordan.
So the other thing, a funny thing is all these NBA players tweeted at Donovan Mitchell telling them they're not going to get pizza or dinner with them in Utah ever again. Trey Young said, at least now I know I ain't eating pizza in Utah anymore. Pascal said, hey, Spider Mitchell, that's how y'all moving? I am not going to dinner with you in Denver ever. It's pretty funny,
like Tim Grover saying he had a bad feeling about the pizza when the five guys showed up and Jordan saying he ate the whole thing all by himself and nobody else had a piece. And I still think you look at that, you watch that game and you just see, I remember watching it live and the way he was moving around the court and what he would do at every timeout and just sit down on the bench and put the towel over his head and have his head down. And he was clearly, you could just see that he was dragging, yet somehow he summoned the will to be able to, you know, take that team and get that win that they needed there in Utah. There's the play that I remember more than any from that game, and they did show it in the doc, but I think they kind of showed it actually, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but I think they showed it out of the order. I don't remember exactly when it happened in the game, but I feel like they showed it maybe in the documentary, like that it happened early in the game. And my recollection of it is that it was later, maybe in the fourth quarter, where Pippen was coming down on a break and I think missed a layup. And then Jordan is following it up, like hustling down the floor, where clearly he would have had excuse or reason not to sprint the floor because it looked like Pippen was going to finish. And Pippen missed the shot and Jordan comes in and dunks it. And then he kind of does his like little signature pump with his arm and just kind of does a little shake. And I remember that's the play I remember from the flu game. And then the other thing I remember is when the game was, I don't know, when it was over or as they were walking to maybe the last timeout, where he just has his arms around Scotty and Scotty's kind of walking off and Jordan is just like draped on him. And you could just see that he had nothing left. And, you know, you look at that game and then you think about the last clinching game the next year where Scotty has all those back problems and, you know, you take Scotty off that team. And who else is generating anything? I mean, as good as Rodman is, it's not generating any offense.
Do you know what the most surprising inclusion in the whole documentary? The amount of time Bill Wellington got. I feel like he got so much time.
Well, his name's Bill Wennington.
Oh, Wennington. I don't know why I thought it was Wellington. Anyways,
it's all good.
He got so much time in all the, I feel like he was in every single episode.
He did. He must've been a good interview. He must've been willing to talk about different things, but they got a lot. I know that the guy who was conspicuous by his absence was Luke Longley. I read something the other day that he doesn't really care for. He had some bad feelings, harbor some bad feelings towards Jordan, and that he declined to participate.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I obviously there, you know, you're going to have some people, right? I mean,
and you know, the other guy who really didn't get much airtime at all, the guy who got the least amount of time of the guys who were most important to that team was Harper. Harper had the one quote. And other than that, there's not really much mention of him at all.
Yeah.
And he just certainly doesn't get much camera time. And, you know, he was a starter on all three of those teams.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't even think about that. I mean, and obviously Kukoc really only had the one episode that he was really involved with too.
Like, right, but he had more airplay than
for sure.
Than Harper, without question.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't know, is there anything else from that Utah series that we need to talk about you found interesting?
I mean, not the fifth, episode 9.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
What else did you take away? You said you really liked that one. Is there anything else that we didn't hit on?
I really liked the Steve Kerr stuff, because obviously I didn't know a lot about the Steve Kerr story. It was fresh to me. I found the way that it, you know, Reggie just kept talking about, oh, we had him, we should have beat him. I thought that was preposterous. Totally forgot that Travis Best was, they didn't talk about him at all. However, he was in like four straight plays. They had his, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that guy played for the Pacers, Travis Best. That was pretty cool to see that. Like just like having a light bulb moment.
Well, it's just like you sometimes remember, you forget what teams these guys are on or which team, you know, which version of those teams these guys are on.
Yeah.
That's something that I think is always interesting, is just to catch up and see who's on there and whatever. And so, yeah, I thought that was an interesting piece.
And like until this documentary, I kind of had forgotten that Rick Smits had existed. Like I just remember him being really tall and lanky and big, tall white guy, played for the Pacers. But I don't kind of forgot that he existed until the rewatching this documentary. I think he was in another episode, which were like last week's episode. He had a brief cameo. Like obviously they didn't talk to him, but just seeing him was.
Plus,
was
he cool. And Chris Mullin shaved their heads for that series.
Oh yeah, that was good. But yeah. Oh, and I thought it was funny the first episode, at least in episode 9, the Utah fans. I didn't like. They're pretty vicious, man. I don't know.
That one blonde lady up screaming. I don't even know what she was yelling. She was yelling
lots of obscenities. You could hear it.
I know she was, but I couldn't go back now and quote what she was saying, but clearly there was a lot of obscenities flying.
Chicago was one thing that she said. Yeah,
I think Utah has, we could ask Russell Westbrook, I think, about Utah and
Rodney Hood, right?
Rodney Hood. Yeah. So clearly I think Utah, their crowd has a certain reputation. We'll just kind of leave it at
that. That one for sure. We'll leave it there.
We'll leave it there. We won't take it any further.
So moving to episode 10, Mike, I think the thing that I found the most striking was that Dennis Rodman leaving. I did not know this. I did not remember this. I did not know anything about this. Was Dennis Rodman leaving in the middle of the NBA finals to go be in the WCW versus NWO battle. I thought that was the most historical story I've ever heard, and I can't believe in the middle of the finals that he did that. And this was the tweet that I saw that I liked. In a 48-hour span, Dennis Rodman played hooky to no consequence, whooped DDP's ass on Nitro, made the game-clinching free throws in a finals game, and then went home with Carmen Electra. This hot streak may never be conquered.
I think what it points out to me, there's a couple interesting ways that you can look at this. Number one, if Phil Jackson is not the coach of that team, I don't think that there's any way that Dennis Rodman works in that environment, number one. Number two, for as maniacal of a competitor as Jordan was, and as important as practice was to him and all this, it's kind of amazing that he, I don't want to say put up with, but that Rodman was able to function within the confines of that team, that they were okay with the things that went on. And okay may even be too strong of a term. They just learned to live with it. To me, I think Rodman.
I think tolerant would be the best.
Right, but
there.
You could certainly envision a situation where the best players on a team like that, when these things happen repeatedly over time, and it's not like these things weren't happening all the time, that it just seems like you'd be in a lot of other situations where those guys would go to the coach, the general manager, and say, look, this guy just isn't buying into what we're trying to accomplish. We need to get him out of here. And I think that you look at that team and it's a case where Rodman was great at various points during that 3-year run.
And by the way, he was great the next game.
Right. But I guess my point is that you wonder that if it hadn't been Rodman, if they had replaced him with someone else, because clearly you can't just take Rodman off the team and say, oh, now they're going to start Scott Williams or Judd Bushler or somebody else. They clearly would have been able to attract somebody else. You wonder if you had plugged someone else into that spot who was not quite the rebounder defender that Rodman was, but maybe would have given him a little bit more offense. What that would have looked like with somebody besides Dennis Rodman in that spot. And it's just amazing that they were able to pull it off, that Rodman could do all the things that he did and still seemingly play tireless basketball. And just whether he was hungover, whether he was not practicing, whether he had been in Vegas or been with Carmen Electra or whatever, the fact that he could come out and do the things that he did out on the basketball floor is amazing. And I know we talked about that a little bit last week with Jordan and the golf and the gambling and the being out all night and then being able to get up the next day and just still dominate. It's kind of incredible. And then again, I'm struck by the number of cigars that these guys are smoking during NBA practices.
Wasn't the one quote when Michael woke, they said, what'd you do this morning? It was like after they flew out to Utah and he's like, I woke up, I drank a beer and smoked a cigar in my hotel room. And I was like, that's crazy.
It's kind of amazing. And you wonder, again, if you throw Jordan in a time machine and instead of it being his run being from 91 to 98, if it was from 2011 to 2018, what does it look like? How is it different for him in terms of his training and his cigar smoking and his rest and his load management and all that stuff? Like, one of the most amazing statistics of that run is that he played 304 out of a possible 304 games over that 3 years. That's insane.
Yeah.
At his age and the number of minutes and the load that he was carrying. Like, you can talk about LeBron's longevity, and rightfully so, but to play 304 games in at that time period with that level of pressure on you, with that amount of the load that you have to be carrying night in and night out on both ends of the floor, that to me is just incredible.
Yeah, I agree. We talked a lot of – it's funny, though, because remember 2 years ago when, you know, we get to the Cavs in 2018, LeBron's played all 82 games, and we were like, what is he doing? Like, why is he doing that? And then he played all the games in the playoffs. Now we look back on that and we think, well, crap, Jordan played 304 straight games. Like, why are we – and I know it's a different era and a different age now where players are load management and, you know, they don't play games, but – you could never see, we go back to something we saw in the first episode. I could never envision Michael Jordan taking a game off for load management. Never, ever, ever could I ever see that.
No, and I mean, part of it is the mentality of his era lends itself to somebody like him being able to do that. Whereas even the most competitive guy today might say from a competitive standpoint, well, long term, if I'm concerned about winning playoff games and that's what's most important to me, then maybe it is important for me to take off this game in the middle of the season. It doesn't seem like it would be that way, but maybe if, again, he was in a different era. What I find to be interesting, too, is when you think about across sports in terms of player effectiveness when they're playing maximum amount of games, maximum amount of minutes, you think about starting pitchers in the 70s and 80s and how many complete games those guys threw and how many innings starting pitchers would go. And now you have starting pitchers, they're out of the game by the fifth inning. Nobody's throwing complete games anymore because of the emphasis on the bullpen. And they're so concerned about pitch count and guys' arms and all this stuff. And then you think about from a basketball standpoint, the number of guys that are playing 82 games has been severely cut down. And you just wonder, when you think about the advances in nutrition and sports medicine and rest and recovery and all that, you wonder if you could look at across the spectrum of a study of everybody of those different eras and how it impacted the length of their career and their statistics and all that stuff. And I don't claim to be smart enough to know the answer, but it seems like we do a lot of things now to protect our athletes, and rightfully so. And yet you look back on that era, and maybe it was just guys who were special like Jordan or Nolan Ryan or guys like this who are just physical freaks and marvels that they can do all those things and continue to function.
Cy Young was basically pitching every other day.
Right. And it's a different era. I get it. And you're not playing against the caliber of athletes.
And he wasn't throwing 95 miles an hour. He wasn't
right.
Doing that, you know.
But it's still interesting to kind of think about how that plays itself out in terms of, I think it speaks to the fact that the best athletes, the guys who were the greatest in their era, would be the greatest in any era. And that's not to say that you could take, again, 1962 Wilt Chamberlain and put him into the NBA today and that he would be the same dominant Wilt Chamberlain that he was back then if you just put him in a time machine. But if you had Wilt growing up in this era and coming into the league today with all the same body, but also having the same training methods that we have today and the things and just playing the game the way we play it today, I don't think there's any doubt that guys who were the best when they were playing would continue to be the best because they would just advance along with the modern training methods and the way of the style of the game, the way it's played.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, obviously there's just so much information out there now for new, like you said, nutrition. Because obviously, like, I think of LeBron, and I mean, I'm sure he has a beer every once in a while, but I'm pretty sure his diet is restricted. His diet is he's taking care of his diet. I know he likes to drink his wine, with dinner and stuff.
You don't think he's pounding a six pack of Sprite every day?
I don't think so. I just don't. I don't envision him doing that. Side note: did you see his? Did you see any of his graduation stuff yesterday, Mike? Or no?
I did not. No, I did not.
I thought his speech was good. I thought Obama's speech was pretty good. But I thought props to LeBron. Props to LeBron.
Hey, listen, LeBron is a fantastic role model for anybody out there who is aspiring to be a professional athlete. He's a tremendous role model in terms of the way he's conducted himself on and off the court. I think that you look at what he's done from as a basketball player, but you also look at what he's been able to accomplish as a human being. And especially when you consider the spotlight that was on him from the time he was 15 or 16 years old, it's incredible. And I don't want anybody in any way, shape, or form to think that my affinity for Michael as the greatest player of all time makes me feel like I'm denigrating LeBron. I just think that Jordan has set a bar that it's going to be, I don't want to say impossible, but it's about as close to impossible of a bar to get over as I can imagine. And LeBron's going to, by the time he's done, he's going to come closer than anybody else, but he's just not going to get there as a basketball player. He's just not. And that's reality.
Okay. I saw this earlier today too. Did you see this stat going around? Michael Jordan versus MVPs of last 20 seasons, game time, go ahead, field goal percentage in the last 24 seconds during their playoff careers. Did you see this graphic going around?
I did not see it. I read a similar article back a little while ago. I think it was Zach Cram on The Ringer that put together the clutch playoff.
So here you go. Michael Jordan, the minimum is 10 field goals. They don't say how many. Michael Jordan, 50%. Second place on that list is Dirk Nowitzki at 39%. Okay. LeBron is 37%. Steph, 29%. Tim Duncan, 29%. Durant, surprisingly, at 25%. My favorite, James Harden, 8%.
He's shooting 8% in that situation?
Yes, in this game tying / go ahead field goal and final 24 seconds in their playoff careers. Minimum 10 field goal attempts. So he's at least done taking 10. I'm trying to figure out 8%, and that probably means he's 1 for 12 would be my guess.
Well, let's put it this way. The eye test, in this case, we probably didn't need the analytics to tell us that, but in this case, the analytics back up the eye test when it comes to James Harden. And in that case, when it comes to Jordan, I think, like I said earlier, the most amazing part of it to me is just that sense of inevitability that, yeah, he missed half of the shots he took in those situations, but
you always thought it was going in.
You always thought it was going in. And then he always avenged those losses, those mistakes, those missed shots. They never were crippling. They never crushed him. He always came back with a better performance or a better shot or just something incredible. And you expected it. And that's what it comes down to for me. I never have watched another athlete who I expected it to happen for them. There just was never anybody like that. Tiger probably came the closest in that short window from whatever 2000 to 2008, where you just felt like if this guy's in it, he's going to win. But even Tiger, time and the situation with his wife and his back and his injuries and everything robbed him of that air of invincibility. And I think you look at Jordan and that air of invincibility never got taken away, even when he comes back with the Wizards. I mean, I guess I just throw that away in my mind in terms of him really being.
What, he played for the Wizards? Because the documentary didn't talk about it at all.
I know. It's interesting that they didn't put that at the end. I know you mentioned that last week, that they didn't even have a side note that, hey, he retired, but eventually he came back to the Wizards and returned to the NBA. So it's curious as to why they didn't at least put that in as a footnote. But, you know, I guess they're talking
maybe
about
they're, it maybe they're the saving it, saving episode 11 and 12 for another slow time, and they're going to release maybe two more episodes.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
You know, they did, like Netflix did The Tiger King, and then they released another episode of it. So maybe they're following that model, Mike.
There you go. That could be.
Will be. I really enjoyed this. I don't know. Are you ready to kind of put a kind of.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the last series against the Jazz.
Oh, okay.
Just because I think there's some interesting things in there that I knew, but I forgot. I forgot how bad that they scored 54 points.
I almost fell out of my chair. How is that even possible?
Yeah. I forgot. I mean, I knew that at some point, but
did you watch The Office, Mike? Did you watch The Office when it was on TV? Oh, there's a really good. There was ESPN did a fake 30 for 30 with Steve Carell. There, I don't know if you saw. I think I sent that to you way back when they did a thing where they had a basketball game in their warehouse, but one of the guys was Stanley and he was dribbling the ball like, you know, like how little kids dribble with the, you know, their butts hanging in the back, and they stick their hand out and they dribble it with their palm instead of dribbling it, you know, and they said, someone tweeted, the Utah Jazz during game 3 of the 1998 finals, and they put a picture of Stanley dribbling the ball. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. And that's, I mean, you think about that score, it's almost impossible to score that few points. And it also goes to, you look at the final scores in all those games, and I don't have them in front of me, but I don't even know if they cracked 100 at any point, both teams. And then just the volume of points that Jordan was scoring compared to the total number of points that his team was scoring and that the opposition was scoring makes what he was able to do.
Here's the scores, Mike.
Incredible. All right.
Game 1, 88-85 Jazz. Game 2, 93-88 Chicago. Game 3, 96-54. Game 4, 86-82. Game 5, 83-81. Game 6, 87-86. So 96 was the most that any of the teams scored.
So nobody cracks 100 in that whole series. And yet Jordan averages, I don't know what his average was that series, but probably 31, 32, somewhere in there. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe you can pull it up in a second, but it's just, it's not like he's averaging 30 on a team that's getting 120. He's averaging 30 on a team that's scoring maybe 90. And it just makes what he was able to do even more incredible. And then I just think that closeout game in the 98 finals where Scottie's down and really can't do much. And I had not forgotten about that, but it was jarring to watch Pippen try to move in the highlights that they showed in that game. And you could just see him wincing. And I know at one point when I was younger, probably this was when I was maybe like 14, 15 years old, I had some kind of back problem that made it really hard for me to move around. And I could totally, I remember in the moment watching it and just being able to totally relate to Pippen going, God, I don't know how that guy is out there playing and moving around at all. And you watch those clips and you can just see him laboring on everything that he does. And so you take Pippen's creativity and offense out of that team and my God, who creates offense for them? The answer is nobody. And
to get your answer, Jordan averaged 33.5, Pippen averaged 15.7, and the third leading scorer, Tony Kukoc, averaged 15.2 points per game.
So, I mean, Jordan's averaging 33 a game on a team that probably averaged...
They averaged 88. And the one game that they scored 96 and Utah scored 54, that's kind of blown out of proportion, you know what I mean? Like... They probably realistically, you look at it, they probably, if you take that game away, they probably only averaged what, 85, 84 points per game. So
yeah, I mean, it's still it's a huge, let's put it this way, 33 is a huge percentage of whatever number you want to use, whether you throw 96 points out as an outlier or you include it, it doesn't really matter. That 33 is still a huge chunk of what that team is scoring as a whole, and that last game was just, I mean, it was just a tour de force of what Jordan was and who he was. And then that last 30 seconds of the driving layup out of the timeout, the steal of Malone, and then obviously the jumper. I thought Rodman's quotes were hilarious.
I knew
he was going to shoot it. My job was just to get, I'm just getting out of the way. I knew he was going to shoot it. He's like, he's not passing it to Paxton. He's not passing it to Kerr.
You cleaned that up a little bit from what Ben said.
I did clean it up. It was probably fun. It was funnier. Rodman's version was a lot funnier than mine, but it was a great quote. And I think it summed up probably how the players on the Bulls felt, but I'm sure it was probably how the players on Utah felt as well.
Do you know who the second leading scorer for the Jazz was in this series, Mike?
Man. So I got to believe then it's not Stockton.
It's not Stockton.
Okay, so I don't think it was. Wasn't Hornacek.
It was Hornacek.
Was it Hornacek? Okay.
So Karl Malone averaged 25. Hornacek averaged 10.7 points. Stockton averaged 9.7 points.
What did the Jazz average for the series?
80. That 54 completely.
No, that 54 plays into it. I agree, but still, that's brutal. I mean, that is just brutal. And I don't think, you know, you look at there was a bunch of different shots on Twitter. I loved how in the documentary they sort of pulled the fan shots while Jordan was taking that final shot, and they just blew up and enlarged a bunch of different shots of the crowd.
Yeah.
As that shot was going in, they finally got to the one. There was like a young Bulls kid, a young Bulls fan with a Jordan jersey on, with his hands above his head, and everybody else just has this just frightened look that, like, they know it's going in. I mean, everybody knows it's going in. Everybody's just kind of like in this tensed up facial expression.
Who is Adam Keefe, Mike?
Adam Keefe.
He started three games in that series.
Yeah.
Were they just trying to figure out who would? I mean, Greg Foster started two games. Greg Ostertag started one, and Adam Keefe. I have no idea who Adam Keefe is. I got to pull up a picture of him.
Adam Keefe had red hair. He's about 6'9", white guy.
Oh yeah, look at you. You know what college you went to?
Stanford.
Wow, look at you, Mike. I feel like I have to play this. We might have to play this game. You might have to pull out cards. That might be an episode. Pull out cards because we're not. Since we're all right, not
give me the rest of the Jazz roster. Let's see how I do.
Rest of the roster?
Yeah, just start pulling out. Just go down the list.
Okay, let's see
how many. We'll see how many I can get.
Karl Malone.
Louisiana Tech.
Okay. I don't know any of these, so I got. There's only one that I know.
All right,
I got to click on each one. Hornacek.
I should know, but I got nothing on Hornacek.
He went to Elmhurst? No. Where'd he go? I don't even see it. It's not on here. The heck is this?
You're on the wrong website.
No, I'm on Basketball Reference. Why is it not on here? All the other ones showed up. All right, well.
All right, I'll get it.
All right, hold on. I don't know.
All right, well, this went nowhere.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought for some reason all the other ones.
Iowa State.
It's bizarre. Some of them have, like, even Stockton, like, you know where Stockton went, right?
Gonzaga.
Yeah, I knew Gonzaga. Some of them have it and some of them don't. It's bizarre. I don't know why. Maybe Basketball Reference only puts certain players on there.
Hornacek was born in Elmhurst, Illinois.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, that's what I saw. I saw Elmhurst. But, like, for some of them, some of the Basketball References have the counts. Like, Byron Russell's does. Where did Byron Russell go?
I have no idea.
Cal State Long Beach, baby.
All right, there you go.
See, can you do Shannon Anderson?
Nah, I don't know where Shannon Anderson went.
And this one doesn't. This Shannon Anderson is not. Oh well, we're done with this because this one doesn't. This website, Basketball Reference. Georgia. Shannon Anderson went to Georgia.
Okay, all right.
Are we done with this? Do you want?
We're done. Yeah, we're done. Okay. We're done.
Dickie Simpkins. He was a Bull. I never heard of Dickie Simpkins. Have you heard of Dip?
Oh, yeah. Dickie Simpkins, absolutely. He was a reserve. I forget where he went to see. Providence?
Providence is correct, Mike. Oh, my God.
All right. See, there you go. I'm not looking at it. I swear. I'm not looking at that. I have my Jeff Hornacek page pulled up. So
I'm impressed.
I don't know why I know Dickie Simpkins went to Providence, but I do for some reason. So
That's impressive. And his real name is Lubara. So that's an interesting fact for you.
Okay. There you go.
All right, that's enough deep dives on Dickie.
Yeah, we went a little bit down a rabbit hole there with the Jazz.
Apologize.
College. Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
anything else from that series that you want to pull away? Is there anything else? I forgot. You look at. I loved Sloan's reaction. Was that really the final score?
Yeah, that was funny.
That was good. Like I never remember Sloan having a sense of humor. I always felt like he was very. Stone-faced, but serious. Yeah. But I think that was obviously towards the end of his career, and obviously that's what we remember him from. But I mean, he was probably still pretty serious, but that was a little humor.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was funny for him.
That was funny in the moment.
And then they didn't, you know, going back to a question that I asked last week, who are the Jazz were they going to interview? They only interviewed Stockton. He was the only one, right? They didn't have anyone else.
Yeah, Brian Russell. No Karl Malone.
Which, by the way, Karl Malone was, like, you know, we talked about, oh, he's kind of, I wouldn't say a recluse, but kind of, but he was on a Zoom call today with Dominique Wilkins. It was him, Dominique Wilkins, and someone else for the Atlanta Hawks. And they had, they kind of talked about, they were talking about things totally unrelated to The Last Dance. But I'm like, are you serious, Karl Malone? You did this, but you didn't do The Last Dance? Give me a break, kid.
I actually thought Malone came out of this looking better than maybe he deserved. Clearly, him going on the bus afterward and shaking everybody's hand, that reflected well on him from a sportsmanship standpoint. And then there were some things that they left out, like they left out him missing the two free throws. And I think it was the flu game. I can't remember which one it was, where Scotty trash talked him at the foul line and said, the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays. And, you know, they left that piece of it out. And I think Malone always just kind of, he always left you wanting. He just, he was 95% of the way there and just never really took you all the way over the top. And you didn't necessarily get a sense of that. If your only knowledge of Karl Malone's performance in those two series was what you saw in this documentary, you wouldn't have gotten a sense that Malone came up small. And yet if you watch those series live, or you go back and you kind of look at him in totality, clearly he did at some point
come up. By the way, that pass that Stockton made, that one-handed pass, that was pretty sweet pass.
That was
a good pass. You look at the thing that I think about too is, like, we talk about Malone being the second time all-time leading scorer, and I provided that NBA some point returns, and which I think it will at least next year, but if it doesn't come back now, I think LeBron will be there. I think LeBron will pass him. Do you agree with that? He will pass him, right? LeBron will pass Karl Malone?
I think so. And barring injury, he's going to pass him.
He's going to pass him. I don't know about Jabbar. I'm questionable on that, but we'll see. But I think
where's LeBron at now? Do you have it right in front of you?
I can look it up real quick, but I think, you know, I kind of always forget that he's the second all-time leading scorer. Like,
but we talked about it before. He played at such a high level for such a long time that you put up enough season. You put up 15 seasons, averaging 25 points a game, and that adds up.
So
over
here
time.
We go. So here's where we at. Kareem has 38,387. Karl Malone has 36,928. LeBron has 34,087. LeBron's definitely passing Malone. He only needs 4,300 points to pass Kareem. So maybe he will do it.
So he needs probably, at his current pace, let's say he averaged 25 a game, right, this year?
Yeah.
So he needs to get 4,000 points divided by 25 a game. That'd be 160 games of averaging 25 a game. Now, does he have two more seasons averaging 25 a game at 160 games? That's playing 80 out of 82 games. Is that likely? So you're probably looking
That does not include playoffs, right? Or does it include playoffs?
Does not include playoffs.
I think here's my argument, Mike. I think he's got four more years in the league. So even if he tapers it down and say he averages 23 next year and 20 the year after, I think he's got four more years left at least in his legs. So I think he will pass Kareem. I don't have any.
If he needs three seasons to do it, and if he doesn't get hurt, I think that's the caveat. Is clearly he's shown a propensity for staying healthy, and the way he takes care of his body, like we talked about earlier, would lead you to believe that he's going to be able to continue to play at a high level, or at least at a level where he'll be able to get enough points that he can eventually pass him if he plays three or four more years. And I would say if he's healthy, he's going to be able to do it. The question just becomes, can he stay healthy? But I would guess that he's probably going to do it. As we've talked about it before, the argument for LeBron over Jordan is just the longevity of his career and the outstanding play that he had just over a bigger number of seasons.
I got a question for you, Mike.
Okay.
Of the active players in the NBA, who's the second leading scorer of active members of the NBA?
Who's second behind LeBron?
Yeah.
All right, it's got to be somebody who's been in the league for a while. Man, I'm trying to think who's still active and hanging around that's been in the league for a while. Carmelo.
It is Carmelo. And then we'll just do one more. Third, who's after Carmelo? Active players in the NBA. I don't think there's any chance you get this.
Let me think. Third. Somebody who's been in the league for a while.
I'll give you a hint, Mike. I'll give you a hint. Okay. It's someone that I've advocated for the past to do certain things, but they haven't followed through because the NBA is lame.
Oh, Vince Carter.
Vince Carter. He's 19th all-time in scoring, Mike.
I mean, again, you look at the longevity. It's all about longevity in those cases.
99 to 2019. I mean, that's amazing.
I mean, you play a long time. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, obviously, he had some really high scoring seasons, but if you play 20 seasons, you only average 15 a game. You're going to be in the probably be in the top 50 if you only average 15 a game over those 20 seasons.
Yeah, he averaged 16 a game in his career, 16.7. So,
yeah, and he had some big seasons, obviously early, and then lately
he's been kind of playing the old head.
That career average has gone, yeah. That career average has gone down, and that's where Jordan's. I think Jordan's career average is over 30, and he just didn't decline. And even when he played with the Wizards, he averaged over 20. He didn't have, he never had a season where he was down in the, 12, 13, whatever range. I think I saw this stat on Twitter today that he has the longest streak of playoff games in a row having scored 15 or more points. It was like 179 games in a row.
Who was that?
And the Jordan.
Oh yeah.
And the current active streak is Kawhi with, I think, 40 is the current highest streak.
Well, it's just like going, that goes to the, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but it's like the Cal Ripken consecutive games straight. Like there's no one ever going to touch that.
No, absolutely not.
Or the Tiger Woods consecutive cuts made in any event. Like, I can't remember. I think he went like 5.5 golf seasons without missing a cut, which is crazy. That's just nuts.
It's crazy. Yeah, absolutely. So.
All right.
Anything else? Anything else?
I think I really enjoyed this documentary. I don't know if you saw that they're doing. There was another. I saw a documentary. They're doing like a one night. Another NBA one, I saw it, and I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it's on NBA TV. They're doing another like mini doc, but it's not a Jordan one.
Okay.
If it's a fraction as good as this was, I would be pleasantly happy about it, just because we're just needing sports. As things are starting back up. NASCAR started today, Mike. I know you probably. I didn't watch a single. I can't watch cars go around in a circle. They did have a golf thing today. I watched some of that. I didn't sit and watch the whole thing because it wasn't Tiger, so I didn't watch it. But I'm just excited to kind of get sports back, and this was like the perfect thing to kind of whet our appetite and prime us during this time. And, I definitely would be interesting to, would have been interesting to see how it would have played if they would have done it the original way. NBA Finals game, and then the next night I think that was the original plan, right? They were going to alternate. Like there was an NBA Finals game, and then the next night was going to be an episode of The Last Dance. Is that how it was going to work?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. I know it was supposed to be. I thought it was supposed to start after the finals was over, but maybe I was wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't really know.
I seem to believe I read that their plan was that. That way that the conversation was always going to be the NBA and basketball for the whole time the finals is on to hopefully drum up interest. Cause the finals historically have been getting great ratings. All right. They don't get as good a rating. So I think that the rationale was that the NBA was going to kind of alternate between the finals and this, and hopefully to drum up interest in the finals. And obviously that didn't end up working out because we didn't have the finals going on. So we don't know how it would have looked, but I think that would have been interesting if they would have done it that way.
Yeah. Who knows how it would have looked different in terms of whether the ratings would have been better. I think for me, it really doesn't matter, because just the subject matter of being able to see the stuff with Jordan, I would have tuned in no matter when it was. And I think a lot of people probably would have felt the same way. I think that this particular format and documentary, sure, maybe there's a few more eyeballs on it that there would have been at other times. But I think if you're an NBA fan, if you're a Michael Jordan fan, you would have tuned into this thing no matter when it took place. So it was tremendous. I'm going to miss it terribly when it's Sunday night next week and I'm not going to have it to be able to watch. I definitely, it leaves me wanting more. It left me with this feeling of, it's weird, takes you back to, not that I was completely a kid during the time when Jordan was coming up, but it takes you back to this moment of fandom, and just, you remember how special it was to be able to watch him play, and just the feeling that I had watching him, and just how, sounds stupid, but just the privilege of being able to watch this guy play basketball and do the things that he did were just incredible and mind-blowing. I felt that way at the time, and going back and watching him now as a 50-year-old man, I still feel the same way. I got the same chills, the same excitement, the same joy out of watching Jordan play that I did when I was watching it live. It was tremendous.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed it. And you know, I just hope that sports are back soon now that this is over, because, you know, I have faith that the NBA is going to come up with a way to make the season happen. I do not have faith in Major League Baseball. They seem like they are lost in the sea. So our hope relies on the NBA. And thankfully, it seems like golf is going to have their way figured out. It'll be interesting to see once the actual tournament start how it works, because today they had four pros playing with no caddies and they were carrying their own bags. I thought that was amazing. But
well, let's see how that goes as we move forward here. We all still can try to figure out what it's going to look like from a pro sports landscape, from a youth sports landscape, from a high school sports landscape. Nobody really knows where we're going to be a month from now. Nobody knows we're going to be like 3 months from now. So we'll just have to wait and see. Before we wrap up, give me your top, let's say, two or three moments from the entirety of the documentary, and that's where we'll wrap things up today.
I think the number one, that the quote, you know, that we've talked a lot about, I thought that was probably, that was definitely the most poignant moment of the whole thing, the leadership quote. I think that was the most poignant moment.
Winning has a price. Leadership has a price. That's probably my number one most impactful quote from Jordan. I would agree.
So I think there's lots of things, like the small funny things that just like tonight, Rodman. I guess the two Rodman escapades. Those kind of made me laugh. I think the big thing for me was forgetting some of the smaller things along, like Jordan breaking his foot, not knowing about Jordan's dad and like exactly going missing for 3 weeks and how that was just bizarre. Cause like nowadays I don't know that someone like his dad, that high profile, would go missing for 3 weeks. Obviously his dad would have had a cell phone, so we would have probably figured things out, but just like small little details like that. It was just nice to like hear and see it, everything, because obviously I was young and I don't remember things. And my least favorite moment was the amount of times I had to see the shot happen. So, because I'm pretty sure between all of the footage and the episodes and like the intro, we probably saw it 15 times.
It was nice though that Joe Tate got
His voice on it. Yeah,
in the intro. That was kind of cool for Cavs fans, even though it was a bad moment for Cavs fans. It was cool to hear Tate's voice every week on every episode. That was kind of fun.
Yep.
definitely miss Joe Tate for Cavs fans out there. It's just not the same listening to the Cavs on the radio without him. So my moments, you already mentioned one, was the winning and leadership quote. I just thought that summed up what it meant to be a winner in the league and what Jordan was all about. Then I think my second favorite was the 63-point game in Boston and the highlights of that being played with LL Cool J's I'm Bad. I just thought it was a perfect choice of music from the era when that game was played.
Yeah, I feel like the soundtrack the last two episodes wasn't as good, Mike.
They didn't have as much music. There just wasn't as much of it in there.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason. And so it definitely wasn't as impactful. I thought the first six episodes, the music was directly correlated to what we were seeing on the screen. And you're right. I just don't feel like they used the music as much in episodes 7, 8, 9, 10 as they did in the first six. But the LL I'm Bad with the 63-point game in the Garden, I thought was perfect. I think back to that time and just, that was sort of the introduction to Jordan, to the world that, hey, this guy is going to be something special. And then the last part, or the last one of my top three was Jordan's reaction to being shown the Isaiah tape of him talking about when they walked off.
Oh, yeah, that and just was good too.
What he said before they handed him the iPad, that, you know, I don't care what this guy says. He's, you know, you're never going to convince me that he's not an a-hole. And I think that those quotes and then the LL I'm Bad, those are my three favorite things. And there was, I mean, again, I could just list many, 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 many more, but those are three that stood out to me that when I think back on this, those are some of the ones that I'm going to always remember. And man, it was great. I'm sad it's over.
Well, Mike, I've got some positive news for you. Did you see the ESPN tweet from 2 hours ago? On Tuesday, they're airing game 6 of the 98 NBA Finals on ESPN at 9 p.m. It's the full game telecast in HD with never before seen footage captured by the Last Dance cameras.
All right.
Looks like you're DVRing that one.
Looks like I got that one. I got that one. Tuesday at 9 p.m. I'm marking it down.
Or I guess Wednesday. I forgot that it's Monday already. I'm looking at the dates. It's the 20th. So Wednesday at 9 p.m. So.
All right. Sounds good. All right, let's wrap things up. We'll make some housekeeping announcements here. Number one, we have our new webinar series starting this week on Thursday with former NBA coach Butch Carter. That'll be at 9 p.m. on Thursday. Zoom call, go to hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get signed up for that. Since the Last Dance is over, Jay, I think we're going to go back and return to our regular schedule where we'll have 2 interview episodes a week. So we'll put one out late Sunday night, put one out late Thursday night, and then we will do our NBA episode in whatever version that ends up taking, whatever format we decide makes most sense. We'll go back to recording that late Tuesday night to go up on Wednesday morning, late Tuesday night, depending on when we finish it. So back to our 3 times a week schedule now that the Last Dance, unfortunately, is behind us.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. We'll wrap things up there. Thanks for staying up late with us.
2:20.
2:20 a.m. We will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.